Blog Talk Radio.
Jesus, draw me ever nearer as I labor through the storm you have called me.
Nathan?
Yes.
Welcome, everyone, to Blog Talk Radio. It's May 16th, 2017, and we welcome you all to the call tonight with Dr. Alali and our guests from Canada and our co-host Nathan Hill and our host, the lady with the most. Getting younger and younger every day, I tell you what, I'm jealous, Dr. A.
Yes. We're going to have you,
right? That's right. You look beautiful. Totally beautiful. Yes, but I hope you had a great Mother's Day, and I hope the guys had treated their wives well for Mother's Day. I don't know if you had Mother's Day in Canada or not, but whatever. Anyway, it's all good. Welcome to the call. And Dr. Alali, I'm going to turn it over to you because you know I can ramble sometimes.
Well, it's all good, Ida. Welcome, everyone, to Tuesday Health Talk Radio and Seizure Free Radio. It's been a wonderful day. It's so exciting, and I feel like having a Joe Osteen moment. You know how Pastor Osteen always opens up his sermons with a joke. Well, this morning I happened to be in Ohio, and I went by to take my grandbaby to see if she needed a ride to school, and she told me she was going to ride the bus, and I said, okay, you're going to ride the bus? I said, well, I have to get to Atlanta, so I'm going to go ahead and be about my day. And so it was kind of crazy. So I left and said goodbye to her. And so I stopped down at the gas station to grab a cup of coffee, and all of a sudden my phone rings and it's her. She goes, oh, Dana, I just got a text that the buses are delayed. They're not coming to pick us up today. And I thought to myself, no, that's kind of strange. That the bus would sit out a text 15 minutes before the bus was supposed to come. You know, that's poor planning, but maybe there was some kind of emergency. She says, well, can you come and take me to school? I got a field trip today. I said, okay, I'll take you to school. So I go back and I pick my grandbaby up, and we go to school, and we get there about 10 minutes early before she can get out of the car. So we're just sitting there. I'm watching all these buses pull up and drop the kids off. And I'm like, well, what bus is this that can't come and pick you up? And so I'm reminiscing. I said, are you sure that they sent this text to you? Oh, yeah, man, I'm sure that they sent the text. And I said, well, while we're sitting here waiting for the school to open up and you to be able to exit the car, I said, well, tell me about your field trip. She says, oh, man, we're going to learn about technology. I said, technology? She says, yeah. I said, you mean in the third grade you guys are learning about technology already? She said, yes. I said, well, did you tell your teacher your nana is into nanotechnology? She said, of course I told her you're into nanotechnology. I said, well, what did she say? She said, it's a miracle. Your grandmother, isn't she an old woman? She said, yeah, she's 60 years old. You're telling me a 60-year-old woman knows how to turn on a computer and is into technology? She said, yeah, my nana goes all over the world with her nanotechnology. She said, now this is a miracle. Then she looked up at me and said, you know old women are not supposed to be doing technology, Nana. So I've been giggling all day. I didn't know there was an age requirement or restriction to when you could start nanotechnology or start dealing with technology and stop. But for those of you that's over 59, I'm putting you on notice that those third graders that you might have in your neighborhood might think you're a miracle because you're talking about these nanotechnologies and doing Bayesian testing and transforming the world. Having said that, welcome to the show, everybody, to the people that I love in Canada. My colleagues at Columbia University, I'm giving you a big shout-out. My colleagues at Howard University, I love you for support. My new colleagues at Walden University, We have a whole graduate school here of nursing. Some of their nursing students have completed our course projects with Walden University. They're excited about our new nursing program, the environmental nurse synthesis. I'm excited to be able to share that program with the world. And so we have fabulous news. We have gotten some preliminary information that our academic consortium has been approved, and we've got a grant to be able to support three universities in mapping out this collaborative and how we're going forth with training and certifying the environmental health physicist program for nurses, teachers, farmers, and engineers. So I'm excited about bringing together this project. We're going to be working intensely on it over the summer. I'm here in Atlanta because we have a construction company that's going to be donating a house just for a demonstration laboratory so that students have a designated house that they'll be able to come and survey. They'll be able to play with the technology and interface with the technology because this particular company is so excited about what the technology does and how the technology does it that they're just blown out of off the chart and off the scale. And so there's been testimonies coming in near and far. We have another young lady who's having over 600 seizures a day. She has seizures, yes, in addition to another rare type of disease that I have her doctor giving me information. And one of the reasons in my trip I'm going to be going to see this young lady with her doctor and to see if, in fact, what we can do to retrofit her house so that we can see if mitigation of the home helps to bring some relief to her situation. The word is getting out, and this is what's crazy to me, is that she doesn't live that far from Destiny, from the other young lady that has 600 seizures a day. So the big question is there something in the environment in that space that could have desensitizing these young people? Because it's highly unusual to find a rare seizure disorder, two rare seizure disorders, of having more than 600 seizures a day geographically within about 60 miles of each other. And that's pretty extraordinary. And they just happened to end up having the same wellness practitioner. And I just think that's so amazing. So I am I'm happy to be part of the team that is coming together to look at environmental factors and this child's health. And so this program is an educational format. The technologies that we discussed, none of them were engineered to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. But what we found out is that when Surgeon General Dr. Regina Benjamin put forth the nationwide call to action in 2009 to tell the entire United States, our houses are making us sick. She made a national appeal to universities to begin to explore how to mitigate indoor environments, and she put forth a comprehensive document that's almost 100 pages in that national call to action with some deliberate information citing how the air quality, the lead, the faulty electrical systems were contributing to the demise of health. And Congress followed shortly thereafter, commissioning over 70 scientists to study electromagnetic fields in particular, because it was identified that so many people were getting radiation poisoning, radiation sickness from sustained exposure to electromagnetic fields. And when that bioinitiative report came out, indeed it cited that 9 of the top 10 diseases killing the American people could be directly linked to the fact that we just have too much electricity. We have too much radiation. We have too much high radiation, electrical high radiation coming through the wireless and the Wi-Fi systems in our home. And we're literally having non-fatal electrocution, or we've turned our houses into giant taser guns. And so we're not alone in this battle. I want to bring your attention to the Episcopal Church, because right around that time, the United Nations convened a congress, so to speak, of churches. They convened churches and asked them to be intentional about setting forth an environmental health ministry in their congregation. They asked them to put forth programs, and the Episcopal Church really took the leadership and became the flagship in this movement. They commissioned Dr. Bishop Sally Bingham as their environmental bishop and empowered her or consecrated her to identify ways that the parishioners could reduce their exposure to environmental toxins as well as reduce their dependency upon electricity. And, of course, you've seen the big campaign with the compact light bulb that we know. Yes, it's great for energy efficiency, but because it didn't have a filter on it, a lot of people got sick because it is 1,000 times higher than radiation, electromagnetic radiation, than a regular conventional light bulb. And so, you know, there's been a lot of retraction, and now the campaign kind of repositioned and came out with the LED light bulbs, which do have a filtration system in it. But they're still a hazard and waste. If you break those light bulbs in your house, you're supposed to call a hazmat unit to come in and to remove that waste, because you literally can cause nerve muscle miscommunication and paralysis and find yourself with nerve muscle function that mimics MS or multiple sclerosis. So with the Episcopal Church taking the leadership, Bishop Sally Bingham then became the spearhead. She became the warrior. She became the matriarch for what's called the Interfaith Power and Light. Is a movement that is designated towards sustainability and biosustainability. There's a chapter in almost every state. And at the United Nations, they convened what's called an Environmental Health Sabbath. It was a day where they convened, this was June 2010, and I understand there may be some efforts now to convene another Environmental Health Sabbath, where they brought leaders from around the world together on this whole subject matter of environmental health. And what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about the fact that so many people in the world are developing diabetes and developing seizure disorders and developing, you know, all this cancer? It's a runaway train, and people are not being responsible with the deposit of waste. We're not being proactive in knowing our numbers in our house and really pushing it here in the United States as Canada and as Europe is. And so there's some intentional efforts going on now with Interfaith Power and Light, and it was amazing to see at this summit that they called the world to prayer and to meditate before God to get visions of how to resolve this problem. It was such a reflection of the nationwide call to action, the document that Dr. Benjamin put together in 2009. It reflected a lot of her vision. It reflected a lot of her implementation, and it gives us a springboard, so to speak. Those of us were all over the United States on this call, and there are Interfaith Power and Light chapters in, I believe, 40 states So that's a place of collaboration for you. They meet like once a month, and they talk about resources for environmental mitigation. And so I really want to give a shout-out to Bishop Sally Bingham and her team, because they've done a phenomenal work. You can read that Environmental Health Sabbath. It is posted up, the vision for that, at the United Nations. And it's very powerful. It's a powerful, quick read. Take you about maybe less than 10 minutes to read it. But it's so foundational for what it is we believe and what it is and where it is that we're going. We believe that numerous of these diseases that we're experiencing are coming from our sustained exposure to chemicals and radiation in our environment. The EPA has said 6 out of 10 houses are too toxic to live in due to air and radiation toxicity. The good news is we're doing something about it, and we're doing something about it today. And I want to see, did Elder Clark join us? Our bishop, environmental bishop-elect, Elder David Clark, are you on the line? You may not have been able to tune in yet. I wanted to say congratulations to Elder Clark. He's been nominated as a bishop, environmental bishop-elect. God knows the man has worked in environmental sciences as it relates to pulpit safety campaign and safety with the media department, the microphones and the instruments that are used in worship and sacred spaces for a long time. He began to archive pastors that were having strokes and heart attacks in the pulpit way back 30, almost 40 years ago, and began to bring attention to the fact that somebody needed to be paying attention to all the wireless interface that was going in the pulpit and how it could be impacting the health of the leadership. And it was his research that became kind of a pivot place for us to begin and launch the pulpit safety campaign at Columbia University, which is now getting ready to be archived in several Bible institutions, Bible colleges across the United States. And I just want to give a shout-out and congratulations on your pending appointment and consecration as an environmental bishop. God knows you are so worthy of that honor. And it's been a pleasure to work with you. And going forward, it's been a pleasure to be ignited by the vision that you share. Your wisdom has certainly guided us in so many areas, and we're so grateful to be a part of your team and to impact the world for the kingdom of God. Because at the end of the day, I share with people these nanotechnologies and the protocols that we're gathering have been contrived out of more than 70,000 hours of prayer and over 1,000 intercessors at PrayLive.com who have been praying for this technology since 2004. They've been praying for me since 2004, and certainly the evolution of this technology was prophesied by men and women of God that there was something sick in the environment and God was going to bring innovative technology, and today we know that technology as flat batteries, the nanobio balances, the nanos, you know, and now the solis, which are just, oh my goodness, they are just exploding me with joy. They're doing the unthinkable. They're doing the impossible. The way they interface with the tubes and correcting and lowering the microsurge and correcting the power factor to make our homes safer is just beyond anything anybody could even imagine. And I've been getting texts all week. I had the opportunity to stop into one of our physicians' offices, and she was so excited at how it is working with her office and reducing her electrical bill, but more importantly, making her electrical treatment modalities safer and more therapeutic, because now they don't have the static. So, you know, it's like 100% therapy when she goes to administer it to the customers, the clients that she's serving. And that's been so tremendous. And I just want to see, I heard Rod from our Canadian family on the phone on the show earlier. He called in. I heard him speaking in the background before the show. We went live. Rod, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, man, you got to tell us your solely testimony because it's just too fabulous for me to share by myself.
Well, up here in Canada, we've had a lousy winter, colder than the previous. We've had an extremely lousy spring, a lot of flooding around Montreal, and, you know, just mounds of rain. So, you know, it's like everybody was wondering, when is this crappy weather going to stop? Well, you know, the winter of 2015-16 was the warmest winter on record in Montreal. And so that would in turn reflect, you know, areas where Mario lives and where I live, because we don't live in the city itself. And I got my electric bill in on Friday. I was expecting it. And of course, with our electric utility, they make decisions from a corporate point of view, not from the point of view of an individual or a Quebecer. And, you know, I opened up that bill on Friday afternoon, and I couldn't believe it. I was being charged for 66 days, where the previous year, which was the winter warmest on record, I was charged for 64 days. But I went from $652 all the way down to $354.
Wow.
And that is without a doubt the Soli and Soli Relay. And, you know, it just blew my mind. And Dr. A, one thing I didn't say in my text is that Soli, second generation, was only put up on March 3rd, where the billing started on February 18th. So, you know, more proof that the original Soli would somehow, or I don't know, you would know it, communicate with the relay in the panel. So, if any, I have no doubts whatsoever that this stuff communicates and works. And, you know, it's money in our pockets and not money in what we call Hydro-Quebec. And, you know, they already paid down our deficit for the year by overcharging people, and the government sanctioned it. So there's a lot of legalities coming out of that. But it works. If you have a doubt, yeah.
We're getting reports that are not that fabulous, but there's certainly people are saying that they are definitely saving 10%, a little bit more than 10% on their electric bill. And we aimed decrease the static in windows and help to correct the microserve and stop your window from being a taser gun. You know, as we have gone to survey all these homes, we began to notice people with MS having all these brain lesions on being within 3 to 4 feet of a window. People with migraines, headaches, getting brain lesions, and sleeping within 3 to 4 feet of a window. And as I met a gentleman who was 91 years old, a Jewish gentleman who took me back to World War II, to glass conduction and how it was used in heating systems and infrared systems, and taught me a lot about static radiation in glass. And I took the information. I've been working on SOLI a long time. And I took that information and was able to perfect SOLI. But when I could see, she worked so well that if I could relay her into the panels and pull her all the way in the system, that she would be phenomenal. And this is what's so crazy. Everybody that has SOLI and the SOLI relay in their home, getting all that solar energy coming in, is looking incredibly younger. Their skin is looking unbelievable, like they've had thousands of dollars worth of beauty treatments. And I saw one of our wellness practitioners who's 77 years old. She had the wrinkles of a 77-year-old. She had the stiffness and the movement of a 77-year-old. As soon as we put SOLI in her house and in her retail space, I'm telling you, the woman does not look an hour over 48 years old. She looks in her 40s. 70% of her wrinkles have disappeared. Her muscle, her skin has toned up. She's walking better. It's unbelievable. She says she feels like SOLI has given her 25 years of her life back. I said it looks more like 30 years. Because I mean to tell you, her face, she had fluid in her face, and her face was kind of puffy. I mean to tell you, her face shifted, and it was like an inch smaller. It was like, I mean, her youthfulness was just beaming through. And I wasn't the only one to notice it. Everybody that came in there was like, wow, you really look so useful. And people are still commenting about my picture. I mean, I've had so many proposals for marriage on that picture. One guy screamed out in the gas station, "Marry me, Dr. A." This is crazy. But, you know, it's been tremendous to see how this is a consistent observation in everybody that's got that soul in. So, Ron, how young have you gotten since you've had your panels in?
I don't know, Doc.
You mean to tell me that you're so tall, dark, and handsome, I'm surprised those Canadian women haven't wished you off someplace, and then we don't have you for our Tuesday night radio show.
Oh, I'm very picky.
So did we get our Bishop Elect on the line yet, Elder Clark? Is he here?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, Bishop Elect Elder David Lawrence Clark. We are so humbled that you interrupted your schedule to be with us this evening, because it has been a tremendous opportunity to be able to have you, your wisdom, your insight, your guidance. You have just guided us in this journey of environmental health and certainly safety for sacred spaces in the pulpit. And we just want to celebrate you publicly and thank you for your faith in us, for your belief in us. We can make the world and our churches, our houses of worship, a safer place and a better place for our leadership by teaching them and exhorting them to measure the exposure of air and radiation toxins in their pulpit. And I want you to speak. I know that you have interfaced with the United Nations. You were there at some activities where they were talking about the church needs to take a leadership role in this environmental health quest. And be, you know, visionaries and leaders for even the green movement. And you've interfaced with some interfaith power and light people and parishioners. And so just give us kind of a reflection on why environmental health safety is so critical in houses of worship.
Well, I'd like to thank you for creating this platform for the world and creating this platform for the people of God and the clergy. I really thank God for, and I'm glad to be able to participate. Your consecration, your dedication is a model to the body of Christ, and I appreciate you hearing the voice of God and taking the tangible, the intangible, and making it tangible with all of the technology that you have allowed God to lead you and allow God to bring out things that will protect the body of Christ and protect those, the gift of the body of Christ in the pulpit. I've had the opportunity to observe this particular movement, environmental movement, for a long time. I had the opportunity to attend the United Nations conference. I had the opportunity to talk with Congress members, and especially the bishops from different denominations. And down through the years, they never had a clue of what I was observing and what I was talking about. They didn't have a clue that pastors, clergy, were collapsing in the pulpit. They never had a clue of what was going on and what was causing this to happen. They never had a clue about radiation, the effect of non-ionizing radiation, the EMF, on their lives and also in the pulpit. And this went on for years. The environmental organization Power and Light, they had no particular strategies or seminars or conferences focusing in this particular area. And it really wasn't the interest of those in the United Nations for a very long time. And I participated in the conference there. So it grieved me for a very long time about what was happening. And we finally started the light in 2009. And that's when they established the ICD code about environmental illnesses and different other illnesses that were coming about as a result of the environment. And finally, in my conversation and following up with people, I presented the pulpit safety vision, presented the things that were happening with EMF and why pastors were collapsing. And they began to catch on, I think, in 2009. And so I've been involved for a long time, and now I could say that we have a very long way to go. But the dedication that I received from Dr. A has really prompted the world, especially with the competition at the
Interfaith Power and Light.
Yeah, but at the competition where you were able to win the technology for the invention conference. The invention
conference.
Pardon?
The
invention conference is when you competed with the judges, I mean, other people around the nation. And when you won that particular competition, it began to change things. And we found out that the media began to look into this more. So my experiences have been pretty challenging. And again, there's a lot of work to do. And so now we believe that we will be doing more with the United Nations because there was a group of researchers, experts who developed research and paperwork and presented it to the United Nations and presented it to Congress. And they were requesting that the people, well, that there was danger and that they should be taking everything seriously about the effect of electromagnetic fields, electromagnetic radiation on the public. And in that, they were able to change things for the better. And so these particular experts are saying that we should take preliminary care, preliminary principles to protect ourselves from radiation. And so I encourage that kind of support that we need from the professionals to help support what we're doing. And so pulpit safety, pastors are beginning to see the light, and things, again, are changing for the better, but there is a long, long way to go. So they encourage everyone to take precautionary measures. Don't wear the cell phone on your body. Cut your electrical lights and shut your electrical things down. So things are changing, but again, there's a long way to go. So my experiences have been rather challenging, but I believe that we have a mission and an assignment to save souls for Christ's sake and to save lives in the earth for God's sake. So again, Dr. A, I appreciate the opportunity to share a few moments on this particular platform. And I thank God for everything you have done and all the things that you're going to do in the future.
Well, Elder Clark, I'm sorry that I didn't properly introduce you. Our Bishop-elect, David Lawrence Clark, is a broadcast journalist. He's been a broadcast journalist for 40 years. He's also a psalmist. The brother can sing. This gentleman can sing. He is archived in the National Library of Medicine at the National Institute of Health. He is a trained psychologist, and he authored a music therapy program for people who were struggling with drug addiction. He's in, I don't know how many markets, I think 7 city markets, San Francisco, St. Louis. His program is aired on public cable channels, and he's just a phenomenal man of God. He is the chairperson of the Black History Achievement celebrations that take place twice a year. He celebrates people in the community who are doing outstanding work. And his broadcast reaches probably more than a million viewership now that you're in so many markets. And we feel so grateful. He was my technology coach for competition. He coached me to win the gold medal for the United States at IMPEX in a 44 nation. I had no confidence, and the way he nurtured me, I came to believe in myself. And my knees were knocking, but he got me through that horrendous competition, and I mean it's 4 days of fierce competition. So I want to thank you for interrupting your busy schedule to be with us on the air on such a short notice, Elder Clark. We love and celebrate you. We look forward to the days ahead. So everybody needs to research out the United Nations, because they have a whole office of environmental health now at the United Nations. And so the world is really taking notice of how we're living and what elements in the environment are threatening our very existence. Having said that, I've been talking to some doctors who have reached back into the 1920s. These are medical doctors that are doing some innovative therapies because of our environmental toxins. And I did not know that back in the 1900s and 1920s, if you got cancer, they gave you an IV with hydrogen peroxide, diluted hydrogen peroxide, and they were curing people of cancer. And that treatment modality is resurging. There's a book out called The 1 Minute Cure for Cancer that talks about hydrogen peroxide, food grade, use in curing certain types of cancers. This book is available for your review. I believe you can get a copy on Amazon.com. It's a little booklet that was just a couple of dollars. And it has a whole regimen that people are using for cancer. And I was sharing it with some electricians, and they were telling me that when they went to electrical school, they were told to take like 30 drops of just regular hydrogen peroxide and put it in water, in a quart of water, and they were to sip on it, because it's every time you go in an electrical closet, it decreases hydrogen in the body, which is necessary for conduction, contraction, and nerve cell communication. And so they said that it is taught in school that you should use a diluted hydrogen peroxide formula. So that's something that we'll study out. That's a homework assignment for the week for those listening in. We got to check out hydrogen peroxide. We got to go look at the history of hydrogen peroxide used in medicine for curing cancer and helping the body detox and rebalance from sustained exposure to chemicals and radiation in the environment. It's almost time to say goodbye, but I want to open up the line for any more testimonies that's on the line. Anybody got any burning testimonies? Rob, thank you for sharing with us about the Soli, because she is just too amazing. This solar system is just too amazing.
Dr. Lolly?
Yes, ma'am.
My utility bill for this month is $125.
Woo!
Now, we hadn't really had any bad or either too hot or too cold weather. It's been back and forth, you know, either it's too hot or it's too cold. But I've never seen it at $125.
Well, that sounds like it's more than a hand clap. Yay! Where did you put your relay in the window?
I have my solars in my window, but, you know, I have the wrap on my meter box, on my smart meter.
Okay.
And I
yeah.
have the little, that other unit plugged in. And
so your mitigation system is working. You're getting, you're cleaning your line, so you got some power factor correction going on. And it sounds like you're winning. And that's what
I
it's
hope
all
so.
About. Because what we understand is, when we take down the static and reduce the assault weapon of electricity by cleaning the lines and diffusing dirty electricity, the body is able to balance itself in our homes and we're able to heal. You know, when the body doesn't have to battle being assaulted internally and externally, it's able to power up and heal us. And that's no big secret. I mean, that's just the basic of that's the basic element of cell function and of human life. The body needs to be have a healthy environment, and that was the continuous saying of Florence Nightingale, the woman who is archived as a mother of nursing, not because she started it. Nursing was started by the deacons of the Lutheran Church in Germany. But Florence Nightingale was the one that put a method to the madness. She said, you know what? We have to have some consistency by which we are empowering these people with skills to care for, you know, those who are sick. And there needs to be a method to the madness. There needs to be a basic archiving of skills. So she drafted the first curriculum in nursing, and she's archived in as a mother of nursing. Her curriculum was used throughout Germany and England, and they call her the night nurse, the nurse with the lamp, because she loved to work the night shift to keep people awake, to take care of the sick folks, and she walked with her lamp in those dark wards, keeping nurses, inspiring them to do their very best, even in the dark when people weren't looking. And she started the first nursing program in Bellevue Hospital in New York City. So I was so blessed to be able to go into the nursing archives at the Visiting Nurse Association and blow the dust off of some of those books and touch history with my own hand. And the story of her and the story of Lillian Wald, a nursing student who graduated from New York University and had the mitigated gall to go get a nursing bag, put a stethoscope and some bandages and some normal saline in the bag, and go down to Central Park and start giving free care to people who were on the benches that were sick. And the New Yorkers came together and rallied around her and brought her buildings and built her clinics and whatever she wanted. New Yorkers found a way to empower her vision. And that's why she burns as a flame of hope. Because if the world came together for Lillian Wald in New York City, she helped to set up health caucuses for the Spanish, for the African Americans, for all the immigrants. You know, she set up a caucus with people that could speak their language so she could reduce the health disparities
of diabetes and high blood pressure and asthma. And she did it. And she's my hero. She never married, but people gave her houses. She has a fabulous house on the east side of New York, not far from where Bill Cosby lived. All the rich people live in her neighborhood. And that's where her museum, her library is in there. And, you know, some executive offices of the Visiting Nurse Service of New York City are there. They archive her legacy. And so we are fast forward to the 21st century, and, you know, it's her spirit that inflames my hope. And I thank God for the power of the spoken word. And I'm scratching on having enough courage to simulcast this radio show, Facebook Live, because I really want to take everybody on a webinar to Lake Genesaret in Israel. I want to show you something so awesome and powerful about having faith as part of your fortress in pursuit of environmental health and keeping hope alive in our journey to continue to get this technology and let it speak to us and let it guide us and let it direct us into its the evolution of its the grace of God that's within it. Because truly the vision is greater than me. And I just thank God today for the love and the celebration for the people who believe in us, for the grant that's forthcoming to fund these universities and research to prove to the world that what we've been saying is the absolute mitigated truth. And in this truth, we have scratched the surface of solutions, and we have scratched the surface of modalities, the therapeutic modalities that allow us to transform houses that are killing people into houses that sustain their life. It's time to say goodbye. And so I just want to thank everyone for being on the line tonight. Please forgive me. Your awards are forthcoming. As you know, I lost my nephew, and my world has kind of been sideways a little bit, trying to get through, help my family get through that whole ordeal. My heart is still grieving when I think about this young man, his life. He gone too soon. But there's still hope. There are others that we can reach, because Elder Clark was sharing with me that he went to a conference and someone from the public health community was talking about how electromagnetic frequencies are now contributing to this madness. Substance use, heroin addiction, methamphetamine addiction, and people needing all this to quiet their emotions when they don't realize when you start feeling anxious and hyper, it's because your body has offloaded its trace minerals, primarily iodine and magnesium. And what you need is trace minerals. You don't need heroin. You don't need meth. You don't need reefer. You don't need to smoke any of that stuff. You need some minerals in your body so your body can be at peace. So, folks, I have been on the highway 2 long hours. And before I tuned in to return this, I wanted to get this show done. And I thank everybody again for my interest. Mr. Hill, you are absolutely the best. Queen, Mr. Morris, I love and celebrate you for your relentlessness and lift our voice to the world. We are a global platform. And in this collaboration, we will be training online by live webinars. It's going to be so exciting. And there's going to be consulting opportunities for all of you because it's going to be moving so quickly. We need your wisdom, the testimonies. We need your experience with the technology to help to affirm and ignite the hope of people who share our passion, and they just need a word of encouragement to sustain the journey. Having said that, I love and celebrate all of you. Good night. I'm going in here and shut it down, get my pajamas on, and call it a day.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Anybody in here been through some storms? If you've been through some storms, raise two hands. Well, I see some folks didn't raise their hands. I want to tell you, your storm is on the way. Do I have a witness here? All of us have to go through. Do I have a witness? In fact, the Bible said many are the afflictions of the righteous, but God delivers them out of them all. In fact, I want to tell you tonight, you have to go through in order to get out. Do I have a witness here? Anybody here, if you've been through and God brought you out, I want you to tell two people, say, neighbor, I've been through. But I'm still here. Tell somebody else. Jesus wrote me in. Does anybody here know God brought you?